Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
The conversation continues here as this feature is brought to you by South African Airways, connecting Africa to the world one flight at a time. Book now. Well, as you can tell, there's a lot of excitement happening in the studio here in Cape Town, and rightfully so. Between myself and our colleagues in Joburg, we're making sure that we bring you the best conversations to really reflect on some of the major themes coming out of the Mining Indaba for 2025. The 31st edition. So as you can imagine, over three decades, there have been many evolving conversations that speak to mining as a key and critical sector to not only the South African, but African economy. A good friend of the show, we've seen him in the passageways, he's been intermingling and sharing his insight with many, many participants here at the Mining Indaba. We speak to him too very often here on Kaya Biz, and today he's with me in the studio that we're using in Cape Town. Mr. Peter Major, Director Director for Mining at Modern Corporate Solutions, joining us in studio. Mr. Major,
thank you very much, Gugu. It's so nice to be here, see you in person.
Exactly. I'm really excited to see you and have been witnessing you. You're speaking to many colleagues on the ground. You're quite Mr. Popular here, Peter.
Look, to be honest, I'm probably more incognito this Indaba than all the previous ones.
That's true.
So I think it's by popular demand, they don't want to hear from me for a while. But all the delegates, most of the delegates and I seem to know each other.
100%.
So I'm amongst friends.
I'm happy to hear. So amongst friends and maybe some friends who, make things and conversations very uncomfortable. But this is also important because, as you say, you're a common attendee of the Mining Indaba. It's an industry and sector that you've really been following for most of your career. And I'm really keen to understand, it's day two, 31 years later. What are some of the key highlights for you in particular that might have shifted in previous years here?
Wow, I remember pretty well the very first one, and it was at the Sun Hotel at Strand Street. And it was kind of a joke, and I took it personal. A lot of my colleagues were saying, hey, we popped down there, Pete. Jeez, it's like somebody's got a dream. You know, who's, you call that a conference? And it was, it was up the escalator, and there was probably four or five little booths, a couple posters, and I don't even remember who was giving the talks. I don't know how they stretched it for 2 days because there wasn't enough material and people to even last half a day.
Whoa.
But that was the first one, and I think, what would it have been, 94, 95. But they have grown progressively ever since. Mm-hmm. They just keep getting larger, better, more and more different facets of mining. In fact, this time, it's almost overwhelmingly social and community. I almost think they've gone too far. Because now the people that have been hammering them, you don't do enough for society, you don't do enough for communities, you don't do enough for the average person, the poor people out of work. It's like they're going out of their way to show, hey, you're at the top of our list. You know, before we even think of start mining, we want to get to know you. We want to know your situation.
Mm.
My concern is they're absolving government of doing a lot of what governments used to do.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how it's evolved. And I have no doubt mining is at the top wish list of any country in the world for new investment.
Yeah.
Because mining costs billions. And mining is so under the limelight that I swear the mining people get treated better than the IT people. I know Google's got lovely lounges and you can bring Joey and Susie and get meals. But when you see what the pay is for blue-collar workers in mining, it's always overshadowed. Mm-hmm. Construction about every other blue-collar industry.
I'm so intrigued by you mentioning the theme of the social focus, right, in terms of investment and partnership and making sure that the communities are brought to the fore. And you're right, just in the opening ceremony, we actually saw several representatives of the Coast Khoisan community, women and youth also calling to be represented, and an understanding from even the development finance agencies that they also want to make sure that there's a great level of social impact. In your view, is there a way to do that right? And as you say, having government on board?
There's definitely a way to do it right, and I think it's a fairly easy way to do it right. What I think has happened, though, is there's this entitlement mentality, and people have been brainwashed, I think, by their governments,
mm-hmm.
a little bit by the unions, but I think governments, because this absolves government of doing 2/3 of what they used to do, what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the more trouble a government gets in, the more they point at the mining companies and say, hey, don't attack us. Look at that mining company. He's taking your possessions. He's taking your birthright. And your dad probably died from silicosis. And, yeah, I just find that's not a way to build good two-way relationships. So mining companies... Now, yes, I'm biased because I grew up in a mining town,
mm-hmm.
and I worked in mines starting in...
Remind us where you grew up.
Pardon?
Remind us where you grew up.
Oh, I grew up in Kellogg, Idaho,
yeah.
The world's richest, deepest silver mines.
Yeah.
And they called... It was Bunker Hill, and its nickname was Uncle Bunker. And Uncle Bunker hired people that couldn't get a job anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Bunker trained people that didn't know how to do anything. It made them into artisans. They learned to rewind electric motors. They learned to weld, mechanics, plumbers. Uncle Bunker was like a miniature Anglo-American.
Mm-hmm.
They had a smelter, a refinery. They used all the byproducts. They built a fertilizer plant, the railroads. So,
That's the full value chain there.
It was a full value chain. And people didn't appreciate it, and they abused it, and they abused it. For exactly 100 years, they went on strike. They blew up parts of the mine. And lo and behold, when the big commodity crash of the 70s occurred in 1981, Uncle Bunker couldn't take the financial strain, and it closed the doors.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was in shock. Bunker Hill closed. No way. It's been going for 100 years. It can't close.
Mm-hmm.
The dirty rats. How can they just abandon us here? And a few people made attempts to reopen it, but it was too big, and the mineral prices collapsed too much. Gold fell from 800 down to 400. Silver fell from $50 an ounce to 10 an ounce. It fell too quick, and the workers had built up benefits and bonuses and guarantees, and they didn't want to give any of that up. Well, that was payable at those high prices, but it sure wasn't payable. And it was an old company. It needed pollution control. So a lot of mines followed Bunker. It was a domino effect, very similar to what happened here in our gold mines.
Exactly.
And I won't blame it all on the people, but the community and the people abused it for 100 years, and one day it just couldn't hold up.
Oh, man. I'm hoping that's not the case, because I feel, I guess, conflicted by this. I'm all for capitalism. I'm all for making a profit, but I'm a huge believer in shared value and where we can incorporate communities, especially in a market like South Africa, where unemployment, inequality, and even just, you know, the history of our very checkered past comes to light. I still believe that there does need to be a contribution that's made by business to make sure that the communities they operate in are taken care of. And maybe on that note, Peter, if we do shift the conversation slightly, not only to the people, but we know that there's additional resources that are needed. It's the land. It's the environment. And one thing that's come to the fore in South Africa is the rehabilitation of closed mines. Or perhaps I should say, the lack thereof. The theme around Zamazamas has been spoken in various circles, sometimes in a very closed environment, to actually fully unpack the impact that it's had in an economy like South Africa. Is this unique to South Africa?
No, not at all. Australia has thousands of abandoned mines.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many are properly rehabilitated. Idaho has probably a few thousand abandoned mines. I think they are being rehabilitated because it's the number one national disaster site as of 1982. The EPA came in there.
Sure.
They got $1 billion out of the two largest mining companies. They can't even spend the interest on that. So they've been rehabilitating the area for almost 40 years, and they can't even spend the interest on the billion that they took from the mining companies. So there's no reason a mining company can't rehabilitate to virtually what it was before,
mm-hmm.
especially an underground mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been much more for underground mines. They employ 5 to 10 times more people,
mm-hmm.
and they do 5 to 10 times less damage. So we have to realize mining companies are there to make money, but they have to do it responsibly.
Mm-hmm.
They need people to work. They have to make a safe environment for the people. But governments have a job. Government is supposed to be the unbiased umpire.
Yes.
Right? So you got the union on one side and you got the mine on the other.
Govern.
Government's supposed to be in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Government gets the rehabilitation funds. Now, it's a pretty simple equation. Before you get a mining license, you show the government your plan. They send their mining engineers. They go, okay, we see how much damage you're going to cost. Put that money right here.
Mm-hmm.
So if you guys try pulling any funnies, we keep your money. You try and leave at night or on the weekend, that money more than covers your assets and what we have to do. So government nationalized all the mines here over 20 years ago. So they've had plenty of time granting these thousands of licenses to keep checking, is that rehabilitation funds, is it too much or not enough? It's not enough. You tell the mining company, put in more or we pull your license. We freeze your license. So I really think governments are pretty good at abdicating responsibility. They like getting the taxes, and they like it that the mining companies build the schools, the sewer, the power plant, the roads. And they like to take the taxes and do as they want. So I think there's got to be a lot more accountability that people in the community say, how much taxes did that mining company pay? And where did that money go? Because none of these mining companies' taxes ever goes 100% to the community.
100%. I hear you on that one. And it brings about a whole new theme and an interesting debate to this conversation. And on that note, Peter, I guess naturally we are here on this, you know, part of the African mining Indaba. There's a lot of focus on some of our peers from across the continent. And I'm just intrigued. We have been witnessing that in South Africa, huge divestment from gold mines in comparison to where we were 10, 20, 30 years ago. Huge shift in strategy as well from many of the mining houses in terms of their view on South Africa. And it seems as though a few other commodities, we are struggling. And we also face with market forces. The investment appetite and landscape for South African mining in particular, what does that look like in comparison to the past?
It is night and day difference from the other countries and from our past, Gugu. I think you would have been astounded had you been with me the last few days. You can sit through presentation after presentation, all these different prospecting and mining companies telling you about their great gold deposit. Do you know I haven't seen one in South Africa?
Ooh.
Not one. I see all kinds in Ethiopia, Namibia, even Zimbabwe. All these mining companies that were coming to town. There's thousands of mining people in town this weekend. Mm-hmm. They're all showing off their gold projects. I haven't seen one in South Africa. And we were known as the country that had 50% of the world's gold.
Is that because we've run out of reserves or because the environment is just not conducive?
It's because of our legislation. Because our intellectual giants that run in this country decided they were going to make a mining code and a mining policy that was more suiting to the new South Africa. Mm-hmm. But what kind of policy puts 450,000 gold miners out of work? What kind of policy chases away legitimate investment and attracts syndicates and illegal investment?
Is this the BE policy in particular?
Oh, that's just some frosting on top of the cake. You know, we haven't talked about the cherries and the goodies inside the cake.
And let's go there, because maybe this is what does need to be addressed, because it does seem as though for years, there's a continuing theme of mining being a sunset industry in South Africa. Though we have yet to experience it or see it, you're basically saying that we can avoid it.
We definitely can avoid it. This is the largest massacre since Jonestown, when all those people were forced to drink. Well, supposedly they willingly drank all that Kool-Aid, right?
Mm.
But that Jim Jones mixed up.
Exactly.
And, you know, or like Masada, it was mass suicide. We had this giant mining industry that had perfected how to economically extract minerals from here. They always paid more in taxes than they did in dividends. The government always got more than the shareholders did. And the employees, every year that went by, they not only got a raise, but they got more benefits. They got better living conditions, better perks. And it was continuous. Every day, every year, things were getting better and better for the country, the industry, and the employees. And even when there was remnants of apartheid here, there was hope. All the miners knew apartheid is going. It's fading fast. They could see it. Since the 1979 white mine workers strike on O'Keeppe, when the white mine workers said, we refuse to stand by and allow a person of color to get promoted. Well, O'Keeppe was run by an American company, Newmont. And Newmont says, this is American policy. We promote on meritocracy. And the white mine workers took them to court and to the government. And you know what the National Party said?
Mm-mm.
We're backing Newmont. And that broke the white mine workers union. So things were getting better. There was hope. Every person on the mine, foreign and local, had hope. He just saw things were getting better. And the metal price hadn't even taken off yet.
Peter, there's so much we can explore, but we can't ignore some of the other factors that have been standing out this week. Eskom, Transnet.
Oh, boy. Those are two giants. One's an elephant, one's a gorilla, or one's a rhino. Yes. Two fantastic organizations, world-class organizations. Mm-hmm. Power companies used to send their staff to come see how Eskom did it. Burning the world's lowest grade coal that you couldn't do anything with.
Mm-hmm.
Giving our industries nearly as low-cost energy as Saudi Arabia or Kuwait that burns excess gas.
Yeah.
And that cheap electricity is what spurred all of our beneficiation, which spurred the deepest mines in the world that use a lot of electricity. Giant ventilation fans, giant hoists, air pumping, compressors, ice-making machines. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, cheap electricity, reliable electricity, great infrastructure, sewage, water, and transnet. It was a mining mecca. God mm-hmm. put all the minerals here, and we developed the infrastructure. It was a marriage made in heaven.
And that's the concern, right? Because there's been many questions around the sustainability of the efforts they've put in place after the failures that they've had recently. Transnet, we know, is still continuing with their restructuring plan. Eskom, despite the faux pas that they had over this past weekend, is trying to make sure that there's sustainable energy. Is that enough as part of the conundrum to continue attracting capital?
No, it's not enough. The first thing you got to do if you're attracting capital is show the investor how he's getting a really good deal, how he's going to get a lot more than he put in. Now, most investors that come to South Africa, they're blinded by the light of government bonds. They see these government bonds paying 11, 12%, sure, guaranteed worldwide. They look no further. You know, you get guaranteed 11, 12%, you get perfect liquidity. You can go in and out in seconds. And they say, geez, why do I want to do a mine? Geez, I got to negotiate with the community, the unions, zama-zamas, unreliable electricity, high-priced electricity, if I get it. And it's going to go up 37% next year. So the government bonds are the best investment that most foreigners see. So that's where they stop. Mm. They just want to give government bonds. They don't want to get bogged down in developing a community was left behind by a mining company or by a government that didn't care except during the election. Yeah, we have to do a lot more if we want to attract investment. And we want bricks and mortar investment. We want somebody putting $1 billion in the ground, digging a shaft that's going to be there for 100 years.
Yeah.
We don't want fly-by-night people playing our bonds versus international currency and then leaving the next day. So what do? You have to have a good foundation, huh? Before you build a skyscraper or mine, you put this big, deep foundation that can hold a huge structure. And our foundation has to be our policy.
Yeah.
You know, this is the mining policy we have here. It's designed to attract and hold on to investors. Not we've redone this mining policy, and we know a lot of people aren't going to like it, but this is our wish list. And you can see it was a wish list by a lot of different people because there's just pages and pages. If you go to heaven, you can't find as many good things as they put in that MBRDA.
On that note, Peter, we'll have to leave it there for tonight, but it's always phenomenal speaking to you. I can't wait to hear many of your thoughts in the upcoming weeks, of course, with some of the deals, the partnerships that have been announced by many of the mining houses. But such a pleasure speaking to you, and thank you so much for your time, as always.
Thank you, Gugu. Thank you very much to your audience.
Thank you. That's Peter Major, Director for Mining at Modern Corporate Solutions, helping us unpack some of the insights that we've been hearing here at the Mining Indaba, and really reflections over its evolution over the last few years. Now, as South Africa prepares to host the Mining Indaba 2025, which is currently underway here in Cape Town, South African Airways is at the forefront of connecting the world to Africa's mining opportunities. From Australia to South Africa, from West Africa to Central Africa, including the DRC and Lubumbashi, SAA is the airline of choice for investors and industry leaders. And with our upcoming flights to Dar es Salaam, we are unlocking even more access to Tanzania's mineral wealth. Seamless travel, strategic routes, and cargo solutions that keep mining moving. South African Airways, connecting Africa to the world one flight at a time. Book now at flysaa.com.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.